Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Justin Reed-Sims about running and mental health.
We sure are. I mean, it's a topic, Rick, that we cover off in most episodes, I would say, in some capacity. But this is the official week of it. So if you're ever going to do anything, you know, tick that box and do it this week. But it is an incredibly important topic, so wanted to make sure we had something, you know, specific on it. And Justin's story is a very relatable one, probably to many, and also one of great interest in terms of running's role in how people cope with mental health issues and you know, use it as a form of I don't want to say medicine, but a form of, you know, coping.
Absolutely. He's also quite a funny man, isn't he? So there's a sort there's a lightness of touch to what he says, so it's also a fun one to talk about. And I like that.
He's, you know, I mean, my intro, after I did the intro for him, we found out even more things that he can do.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
So, you know, he's not only is he a running coach, he's a trained chef. What's the other thing he could do?
Was he a lion tamer?
He was a lion tamer, that was it. no, but, you know, he's a jack of all trades and a master of some.
Very good.
So there we go.
Yeah, very good. Talking about jack of all trades, Ben, how's your running going?
Yeah, they're absolutely perfect segue. Yeah, my running's been all right, actually. I didn't do any this weekend because I had a big bike ride planned and did it, and that was great fun. But I managed to crash, which is, you know,
excellent.
Sometimes what happens. And I've got a bit of a sore leg, so I might hold off running this week until it's just a bit of a bruised muscle. Rather than that's...
This was a big old cycle, though, wasn't it? It's like a proper event.
Yeah, it's like a charity ride, but mainly sort of a bit off-road and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a bit bumpy and a bit fun. So, nice. Yeah, it was good day out on the saddle. Well, half a good day and then half a sort of, like, character-building afternoon ride. But, yeah, it was good fun. How's your run going?
Yeah, as well, I'm trying to create the most cowardly route possible, the flattest route possible. So we haven't got any canals my way, but... There is a river. There's a kind of river run that I can do. It's called the Waterlink Way, and it goes kind of up to Deptford, and then it sort of goes down south towards Croydon. So yeah, me and a mate George were running some of that. Headed sort of maybe 9 miles, 10 miles. That's probably the limit of what I'm doing at a minute with after the knee op. But felt pretty good. I mean, I didn't feel pretty good. I felt like quite unfit. It was quite hot as well, wasn't it? So I was a bit like. Yeah. I'm sweating a lot for like what essentially is like like a 9 miles of jogging along like a dead flat river, but it always takes me a little time to get into like, well, I guess we're approaching summer running, which is pretty exciting, but the first few outings in the heat, you're like, oh my god,
that heat adaptation, whatever it is, where you suddenly go, I'm gonna need a big drink after this, and it's not been very far or very fast, but yeah. Well, I'm glad, mate. It sounds good.
Yeah, it was good.
10 miles of running. That sounds... That's 3.1 away from the half marathon that we've got to do in September.
I know, yeah. It's getting close to me, Ben. You know, you're doing a lot of cross... You've gone big on cross training, haven't you?
Yeah, that's my thing. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Shall I hit you with a bit of... science before we get into this? I know sometimes the readers enjoy some of the science that I
absolutely love a bit of science. Is it real science or pseudoscience?
Well, we got in trouble because someone wrote in and said, as amusing as your pseudoscience chat is, a lot of the studies you're talking about are genuine bona fide studies, and it's slightly disrespectful. So,
oh dear.
Thought, okay, fair enough.
I mean, that is true. It was all said in jest, but sure, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, look, I'll tell you about one about an optimal diet. So this was quite a popular one. So an optimal diet can add a decade to your life. So this is, we all know that eating, you know, better can increase longevity, but perhaps we underestimate the impact it can have. So apparently if you went to an optimal diet age 20, we'll get into what an optimal diet is in a second, you could add 10 to 13 years to your life. And even if your 20s were spent in takeaways and getting drunk and all that kind of stuff, even by age 60, if you went over to the optimal diet, you could add 8 to 9 years. So it's not too late for most people. Yeah.
Well, the takeaway from that is literally get a takeaway until you're 60, and then
one possible conclusion from that, Ben. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean the other way is start with a good diet in your youth and live forever.
It is good. I think even at 80, you might add something like 3 years. So the optimal diet compared to the Western diet. So the Western diet was looked at as a sort of standard, and they said an optimal diet would have more fish, legumes, whole grains, nuts, fruit, and veg, and a decreased amount of red meat, processed meat, sugar-sweetened beverages, and refined grains. I mean, it's kind of not surprising in some ways. There's nothing in there that you wouldn't necessarily think.
I mean, the whole refined foods is bad, so that's kind of like makes sense. You know, red meat, that's interesting. That's sort of, you know, taken off the list. I'm not a big red meat eater. I don't think you are either, but still. I've always thought that, you know, the occasional bit of it was beneficial for sort of certain nutrients.
I think that's probably still true. I think that's still true, Ben. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Before anyone I get taken down.
The thing is, you go into the diet world, it's almost not worth it, isn't it? It's very difficult
to generalize on food. It's all so personal and applicable. But anyway, I'm glad that if you have an optimal diet, whatever you know that you've said, that includes pretty much everything, that you can extend your life.
Yeah. Big time.
That's a nice thought.
Hey, look, before we extend the intro any longer, shall we get on our guest of the week?
Oh, he's on fire today. Absolutely on fire. Yeah, it's a great idea. Let's talk to Justin. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Today we are speaking with Justin Reed-Sims, a running coach, Track Mafia alumni, Equinox trainer, One Track Club trainer, a trained chef, a drummer, a music producer, and much more beyond about running and mental health. So Justin, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, happy birthday for yesterday.
Thank you. It's definitely a little bit tougher to train than it was 10 years ago. That's my takeaway for reaching my mid-30s.
The aging process.
Who knew?
So I mean, that's quite a, you know, quite a build-up, quite an intro, but what was your route into running? When did the running bit start?
So I was really involved with sport as a kid, rugby, football, you know, and then sailing, and that was my big thing, like Team GB sailing, big boat stuff, scholarship down to the coast. And then I messed up. I got injured. So it's kind of like a nice segue into where my first sort of dealings with mental health came. But essentially, I did the classic, I'm not the best at this, and so I'm going to recoil and run away. And I went off to uni and forgot about sport in Nottingham. So I ran away from the sea, ran away from all of that. And I didn't find running till my mid-20s, really. I was training at a boxing gym in Essex, and I'm not particularly tall. I didn't want to fight big boys. So I thought I'd stay light. And that's like actually now 10 kilos lighter than I am now, 62 kilos. And to do that, I had to run. And I hated running. But there was a purpose behind it. And so that's why I started running. And then Southend Half Marathon was coming around, a kind of little challenge with my sister. We will challenge each other at anything. So seemed like a good thing to do. And threw my hat into the ring there and ran a 1:30 for my first half. So people are like, oh, this is pretty good. And tied into that, I was around DJs, producers who were part of Run Dem Crew. And it was when you couldn't get into Run Dem Crew unless you turned up on one day of the opening season, that special Tuesday. And I was away a lot. I was traveling And so for years I couldn't get in, and then eventually I kind of cracked it just before I did my first marathon. But I guess, yeah, the classic, come to it a bit later on in life and then throw myself headfirst into it. And luck and proximity to London and the kind of running culture around that really helped.
Other than sort of making you light enough not to get sort of knocked out in boxing, what did you like about running? Was it an immediate hit for you, or was it, I know you said it was a bit of a struggle to start off with, but after the half marathon, did you start thinking, actually, this is a thing in itself that I could quite like?
Yeah, I think once I got into the process of training, and it wasn't a fantastic training plan at the time that I'd come up with. It was more plugging in a distance into the old Nike Run Club app, and being so stubborn that whatever I said I was going to do, I was going to go and do it. And then it started to become a bit more of a, wow, look at where I live. Look at how close everything is. Because I think, you know, this was when I was living in Essex, and then, you know, a similar thing happened moving to London, is you suddenly go, God, this place is really small. And places I thought were a long way away, actually, frustratingly, then once you're really into running, you're like, God, how am I going to plan 20 miles in London? I mean, I've got to run across the city and back again. So I started to appreciate the environment I was in, and then what my legs could do.
If you look back at running, how it was and what running is to you now, how's it changed? What's the biggest takeaway from it? Like the career side of it, or just the challenges that you've completed? Or
I think it's a bit of a balance of the two. I'm incredibly lucky that I essentially, through making a lot of mistakes and then going and working with coaches and my natural geekiness and desire to understand things, drew me down to the route of coaching. And so, you know, classic, ran my first half and then got runner's knee. Didn't know what an IT band was.
Yeah.
But, you know, then 6 months of not really being able to run, but getting into a gym with a proper strength and conditioning coach and saying, actually, wow, I felt awful when I couldn't run. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And I would hate for somebody to go through that. So being able to steer people and sort of guide them and hold their hand in that process has been like one of the best gifts, because it means that I don't get to just celebrate my race days. It's everybody's race day that I work with, and whether that's, you know, first race or, you know, the long journey that so many people go on to try and get into Boston.
And you've been super open on your social media about your mental health, and, you know, I really hope that you're kind of in a good place at the moment, but how have you managed that over the years, and how has running kind of helped with that?
I think early on, running was actually probably a fantastic mask for some pretty unhealthy behaviours. I've been really open about this in sort of the first essay that I wrote, that actually running for me became this physical, you know, activity, this physical manifestation of how I was feeling internally. So my capacity to suffer was enviable. It isn't anymore.
Yeah.
Part of the process of, you know, getting well is actually then going, that's not a very good way to think about running. But, you know, a lot of people, I think there's a real easy mask with something that seems to be a healthy outlet, but actually can be so much about control and the way you set down a plan and then follow it. It can become a little bit a bit of a kind of obsessive behavior, and I think there were certainly tinges of that for me. And although that spurred me on in a performance side of things, and, you know, where everyone has that stage where you're getting quicker and quicker, it's just mine was probably fueled by something slightly less savoury than other people's desire to get healthy. It then, on the other side of that, becomes, you know, I've said it to a couple of friends who've picked up running through COVID and through the last couple of years recently, it's still my best thinking time, whether I'm on my own or whether I'm with somebody else, it's an incredibly present activity. There's not much else. You know, I don't listen to music anymore. I actually listen to podcasts sometimes and sort of pop those on, but it's more to kind of slot myself into that conversation and get an idea of how hard I'm working. And really, I sort of enjoy the being out and just listening to my breath and listening to my feet. It sounds very boring, but actually that's part of what has kind of been the continuous side of running that I grow to appreciate more and more each time I go out. And certainly through, you know, layoffs and through times where I haven't been able to run, it's a thing I miss the most.
It's interesting, sort of like the split between running as a coping mechanism and running as possibly a source of anxiety. And it's something that we've talked around. A mutual friend, Leon, he came on and talked about how he, you know, running alongside discovering medication and actually that sort of medicinal side of life and running was all part and parcel of this package of coping. And Jane, you've talked about your anxiety with running and how it's been the source of quite a lot of anxiety, but also the remedy for quite a lot of it at the same time. When you start training with someone and they approach you with these sorts of things, what advice do you have, if any, that you know you can say to someone? It might well be that if you get injured, you will become anxious about this because you're not running, but you know, also running can be the great thing that helps you balance out what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's really important from the off when I'm working with somebody to understand what their life looks like. I often say to people, most of my role as a coach is validating doing less and being the person that says, actually, you know what, it's okay. So sort of, you know, great example, I had somebody race last week, they got 10k PB, but then they were going into a weekend of traveling and a bit worried about how to fit work in. But you've just had a great, how to fit their runs in. You've had a great week, you've PB'd. It's not the end of the world if we only get a short run in over the weekend, or if we only, you know, if we just end up walking around a new city because we're away. I think people, it's where the plan can become a bit of an undoing if it's very prescriptive and becomes, you know, as you just said, that source of anxiety. How am I going to get this done? And I can put my hands up and say, when I was chefing and training for my first marathon, I would leave a kitchen, go home, and then go for a run. 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning. It was obsessive, and it wasn't a source of anxiety, but it was a source of, or it was a sense of achievement. And so I think part of the running pulling you out of a potentially a dark place is that incredible sense of accomplishment you have at the end of a training plan. Now, I had a coach for my first marathon, but it was, here's your plan, off you go, we're going to check in at halfway. And I mean, she's a fantastic runner, she's a three-time marathon de Saab winner, but her world was ultras. And you know, I stuck to the plan, and although she'd said 80% of the way there, or 80% of completion is as good as complete, there is a tendency to be a bit tied to it and feel like it is the most important thing, where at the end of the day, it's just running, and life is so much more than running. And so I think understanding where this falls in importance with clients is the foundation of all of it. Because if you want to qualify for Boston, or if you want to run a PB, the way you go about things is going to be slightly more obsessive or slightly more out of balance, I think, than it would be if you're just trying to get into running and trying to find an enjoyment with it.
I really relate. I wonder if it's because I like what you said, where it's like if you're using running to kind of pull you out of something, which is definitely how I got into running, to kind of get over mental health problems and eating disorders and whatever. But then it became, at the same time, I have to monitor when it's becoming a stress and when it's causing me anxiety. And I wonder how you balance the two. Like, how do you reframe, I'm going for a run because it's going to make me feel better, not because I have to do X, Y, Z. Like, how do you do that? Because I need to know how, and I need to learn how. So I'm like using you as a coach on the podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think giving people options. So a lot of the time we're very dismissive of not being able to complete, or sorry, of completing something as opposed to completing the session. So say the plan is to go out for an hour, but you're a bit pushed for time and you could only go out for half an hour, but we decide that that's not worthwhile. And, or equally, you know, we've had a really rough day at work and we're not really feeling like getting out, but we might be able to do something short. We can't go out and do a session. And we can't do a workout, rather, but we can get out and we can just spend some time on our feet. I think it's recognizing that sometimes the points of stress that we create in running are because of the minute structure around sessions. I personally, and a lot of my experience, is that we very rarely find the long, easy stuff that stressful, because it is by its nature long and easy. But when you get into the 15 minutes at marathon pace, 4 minute float, another 15 minutes at marathon pace, and suddenly this lovely I'm out on a Saturday morning or I'm out on a Sunday morning experience is so much more. There are all these moving parts and you don't want to mess up any of them. And so it's normal to be a bit nervous going into sessions, I think, but it's important to know that you have options. You can just go out for a run and that is not a bad thing. So even when you're serious in inverted commas or dedicated, you're allowed to just go out and enjoy running. And I do think part of it is the social pressure, the social media pressure that we all find, because everybody, you know, whether you're one of the Strava runners who just lets everything upload as morning run or afternoon run, or we're getting a full breakdown of what you've just done in a session, it's there. It's in your face and you're getting an email saying someone's commented, here's your kudos here. Well, or maybe that isn't enough kudos. And so there are other pressures, I think, that we can also limit our exposure to.
It's funny, Justin. Jane, you may not know this, but it's blown up all over the internet. Jane's got a joy plan, which is basically it's kind of changing the metrics. So it's saying, like, instead of like the success of this plan is based on me getting faster, the success of this plan is actually based on me getting happier, which I think is actually really enlightened, and it'd be quite an interesting concept. Has anyone ever come to you with a request like I just want to run to make myself happy. And could you, what is there anything that you would say to people if to sort of maximize happiness in a training plan? What are some of the things that people could do?
So nobody's come to me asking for a joy plan, although I really want to hear more about it. Yeah, watch this space.
When I write my book on my joy plan, can you be the coach?
Honestly, I'm intrigued. I need to know more about this.
Yeah, it's just to run for joy. You've got to run to be happy, and you only do sessions that make you joyful. So I don't know how you would coach me on my joy plan, because if you put an 8-mile tempo session and that didn't make me joyful, I wouldn't do it. So it's probably uncoachable, but the end goal of the joy plan is to feel happier and to run, because I find, again, I think I'm uncoachable, that training for a plan makes me really stressed, and actually running makes me really happy. So that's the joy plan in a kind of 60-second roundup.
Pitch, elevator. Yeah. Pitch, yeah.
Yeah, but it sounds great. I think I've worked with a lot of first-time marathoners and, you know, people that get charity places. And I will always say to them, if you hate running at the end of this, I've done my job wrong. And touch wood, nobody, like the few that have gone through that process have been really nervous at the start, but have a sort of an overarching goal of, I want to raise money for this charity, it means a lot to me, they're all still running. And I think part of, you know, what I said as my role as a coach of validating doing less is understanding where people are to begin with. It's really easy to promise the world to a coach when you start. Yeah, I can train 6 days a week, double days, you know, throw yourself at it. And it can really quickly become overwhelming. And I now look at people and say the consistency in all of it is what we're looking for. And if that means you can run 2 times a week, 3 times a week, and still enjoy it and not be missing out on other things, then I guess my kind of, you know, joy plan would be a lot of scaled back running so that it's got time for other things. Why don't you go for your long run on a Saturday? Because it means you can have a social life on a Saturday night and you can enjoy a lazy Sunday and then maybe get out and go for a walk. I think a lot of the time, you know, we all kind of went walking crazy in lockdown with get outside and get your steps. But it's so important. And we're kind of, it's easy to forget that the sort of low level activity of just getting outside and going for a walk has exactly the same benefit of going outside for an easy run. And often it's getting out, it's getting away from your computer, it's wherever you're working, whether you're still working at home or not. It's getting out into a bit of green space or getting out into a bit of nature and just moving your body.
Joy plan chapter one done. Thanks, Justin.
And how are you doing now, Justin? How's the world with running with you and your mental health?
It's okay. I think I had a little wobble with running, just my relationship with running last year. A few changes in life. And work, and I'd been due to do London last year. I still haven't done London, despite having got good for age place, qualified for it, and then sort of a long layoff from running, where I didn't run for 280 days. Not that I wasn't ticking them off a calendar like that, but I'm back on it now, and in a good place. So for me, I guess my sort of joy of running in lockdown was that I lived around the corner from a good friend. We did Victoria Park 4 times a week. We went and saw the giraffes at the zoo once a week. And we went and did a loop of the Serpentine once a week. So 6 rounds a week. We had the same conversation about how he stopped listening to hip hop in 1995. He doesn't think Jay-Z's ever had a good album. And it's fine, you know, he's like 10 years older than me, but we would just go out for a run and get a coffee, and it would tee my day up.
Yeah.
In all of that. And then actually when I moved back out of London, I didn't know where I was at with running by myself again. I think it's a kind of blessing and a curse with how easy it is to run with people. And then suddenly when they're not there, you can, you know, the same as when someone jumped into a plan and like a coached session, and we're just like, but we were just running, you know, off of just running like that, you know. For I managed to run a 307 at a virtual London by myself on a rainy day. So without really doing any training, just by going out and running. So now I'm in a much better place, but it's actually come at the kind of discovery of I need other pieces of the puzzle. So I'm on the bike a lot more now. I'm sort of enjoying the new stimulus of exploring on the bike. And I will say that running culture's got a long way to come when we're talking about pastries, because cycling culture and pastry, they're right there.
I've got it.
Gold standard.
We've really got to work on this. Yeah, that's the gold standard. It is hard to stop in the middle of a run. I'll give you that for a sticky bun. But I would say, yeah, that's maybe why the ultra world's looking a bit tempting. You know, enticing to me now.
Have you mentioned at the beginning the sailing. Do you ever find yourself drifting back towards these things? Have you been out on a boat recently?
I haven't, but I'm by the sea, you know. Yeah. So I'm out in the estuary, and so it's definitely something that I find calms me down a lot more, being by the sea. And again, it's why opening up the sort of, you know, point to point running for your long runs was quite a revelation for me a few years ago. I just went, I'll just run there and get the train back. I'll get the train there and run back.
Yeah.
I sort of like, I like the idea of being able to explore on 2 feet and then being able to go, wow, London's tiny.
Have you ever worked with clients, Justin, who maybe had poor mental health when they came into running, and running's been a real boon to them, and actually it's kind of transformed the mental health side of things for them?
I think it's definitely worked alongside other, you know, other treatments, whether it's been medication or whether it's been therapy. And I think a lot of that comes down to that sense of, you know, the kind of double-edged sword sense of control and accomplishment, in that when you're feeling a bit hopeless and a bit lost, anchoring yourself to something and saying, I'm going to follow this for the next 8 weeks, the next 10 weeks, the next 16 weeks, however long it is. And then getting there and getting to the end of getting to a finish line, getting a medal, you know, achieving what you want to achieve it can be, I kind of piggyback it into the rest of your life. You can go, well, if I can get my head down and do this, you know, and it's not in a lazy way, but it's in a, if I can do this by putting some focus into it, then actually maybe trying to fix the other pieces of the puzzle are possible, would be possible. And I think we lose that a lot, but physical activity and running in particular can be this really manageable goal. And, you know, London running community is funny because everybody just jumps up to marathons quickly as possible. And we have this real problem in the UK anyway, where we just double distances. You know, in the US, people do 10 milers, they do 5 milers. There's all these like nice stops along the way, and there's loads of them. Whereas I can only think of the Great South Run as like a 10 miler that's relatively big. So I think not biting off more than they can chew is a kind of the other kind of part of coaching, is going, is this, can you really commit to this right now? And what else is going on? But running with everybody, a sort of great example I have, actually, I train a couple, they're now married, and I was training the guy for the Great North Run. And he said it was the first time he's been out by himself, you know, for 30 minutes, for 45 minutes, not listening to music, not plugged into his mates, and couldn't believe how freeing that was. because the rest of the time he's at work, he's on calls, he's with his fiance, he's on playing COD, you know, all of these things, you're constantly with somebody. And I think being able to almost quieten down the distraction around you and then listen to what's going on in your own head isn't necessarily the nicest thing to begin with. But the more time you spend there, the more enlightening it can be and the more rewarding it can be as an endeavor to get out there and go, you know what, this is really me time. And it's not, and I don't need a distraction from me. I can actually, you know, I like me and I like hanging out with me. It's just, you know, it's hard to do it when our phone's in our pockets and, you know, we're constantly connected to other people. So I think that's the kind of, it's the beauty of running, is that it affords you the potential to just be by yourself. And I'm sure you've all had, you know, maybe less than you've had the opposite, those moments where you do just kind of get into this lovely flow and suddenly time is passing and distance is passing, but you're not really sure. You couldn't put your finger on how quickly or how slowly it is moving. It's just this really nice moment, and suddenly you pop up on the other side and you go, oh wow, I'm here.
We had guests come on and talk about the certainly during lockdown when they missed things like parkrun and their running clubs and those sorts of things. And obviously you're very much ingrained within the world of Track Mafia and that sort of like the support network that a club brings. How does sort of having that in your life as a runner, having the community element, how much does that help you with the down moments?
Oh, massively. I think from what's going on the best part of 10 years now running with Track Mafia, it's being able to spot the things that might go unsaid in other people. And I think when you train with someone week in, week out, or when you're seeing people and you're going out for runs, you get a real sense of their mood. I think before you get a sense of their kind of performance on the day. Certainly on track, you can hear when someone's breathing's a bit more labored or their footsteps are a bit heavier and they might need a bit of a pull or a bit of motivation. But you can also then sense the tie-in to the conversation before, you know, how's work going? What's going on? You know, how's your relationships and all of that, that then play into how they're performing and how they're acting in the session. And it's also, I think now, certainly I know you guys have spoken about REDS and, you know, I'm doing a postgrad at the moment in performance nutrition, and so much of the research around REDS and eating disorders and disordered eating in running points to, particularly in men, ironically, one of the symptoms of REDS being depression and anxiety and irritability. And when there's this aesthetic demand on people through social media and through, you know, just generally looking at what does a fast runner look like, I think much more you can pick up on if people are a bit crabby and a bit, you know, but also their body's changing, or, you know, they're not happy with their body. You can start to pick the pieces, like put the pieces together and say, are you okay? Are you eating enough? Because we're all susceptible to the demands of, you know, looking good or wanting to look good. And endurance sports in particular have, I think, such a troubled relationship with, you know, with body image. And so being in those environments and seeing people and sort of being able to learn about them in what is a really disarming space. I don't know if you guys saw, it was quite a while ago now, there was a short on YouTube called The Runners in Victoria Park. It's brilliant, yeah. And that, you know, they were asking incredibly personal questions and people were just like, oh, let me tell you all about my sex life and all about my relationship troubles. But there is something about movement and about moving your body that is very disarming. And so having those environments, I think, where people know that they can turn up and they will know somebody and they will be supported and guided through it. That's really important. It also, you end up creating these little tribes. You know, I always say to people when they come to Track Mafia, you guys will, you'll soon fall in around somebody. Just recognize them, talk to them, in the warm, in the cool down. Once you've fallen in the session and you know exactly where you are, or roughly where you are, and then they'll turn up and they'll say, oh, great, that person's here, because they know that they're going to be running together tonight. And, you know, over the weeks, over the months, that bond and that friendship, it starts by just being similar in your physical ability, but it develops into so much more.
Justin, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and having a discussion with us about running, the great power that it has in helping people. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, find out a bit more about what you do, what's the best place to find that information?
You can either go to House of Cardinal on Instagram or tap me up at alamareathletic.com. Yeah,
we'll put some links in the bio and all that stuff. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to Justin Reed-Sims and to you, of course, for listening.
If you are struggling with your mental health, depression, experiencing feelings of isolation and loneliness, there are a number of charities you can reach out to. The Samaritans at samaritans.org, Mind, which is mind.org.uk, Calm, which is thecalmzone.net, and Beat, which deals with eating disorders, which is beateatingdisorders.org.uk. Thanks for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.